It's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow.
The whole way long. Say ow.
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 I stepped on a tack.
Say ow. Hey, yo, check it. Check it. It's Thursday night. You apparently forgot to set the clock. You were late for work. You got fired. You don't have a motherfucking thing in your refrigerator, but you paid your internet bill, and you got your shit tuned into SkidRowStudios.com. And you're listening live to the Nestorious Public Radio Show. I'm your host, Nestor Rodriguez, and we're going to have a fun time. We're going to be talking about, we have a beautiful in-house guest, Rose Trochet.
Hello.
Is that how I pronounce your name?
Rose Trochet? It is Troche, but...
Troche, all right.
Sounds cooler when you
Rose
say it.
Rose Troche. No, Troche is better.
Except that people would call me Troche or something like that. Troche. Not better.
Troche, anyway. To my left is Rich Corbin.
What's up, everybody?
And to Rose's right is the incomparable Mrs. Rosemary Rodriguez, the director, producer, wife, interior decorator extraordinaire.
Nice.
I didn't know the interior decorator.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't either.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She don't play.
I want that credit.
She don't play. So that's cool. Rose Troche. So I didn't know you were Puerto Rican. For some reason, I thought maybe you were like...
Jewish.
Jewish. Yeah. But that's what happens when you have... No, when you get
really?
Puerto Rican... Yeah.
Well, in New York,
Because when you're Puerto Rican... And in the Bronx, right? And you speak perfect English, then people think you're Jewish.
Yeah, that's
like,
exactly.
Sotomayor, what's her name?
Yeah.
What's her the justice that was nominated by Obama? Yeah. What's her first name? Is it Rose Sotomayor? No.
No, it's Oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's so embarrassing. You're already making us look like shit.
She's from Chicago, which is where I was born.
Two women, and they don't even know, like, one of their big fucking leaders. A Puerto Rican bitch, too.
I got that right here.
I just know her Sotomayor.
I think her name is Sarah Sotomayor.
No, it's not Sarah. No.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. We'll get that.
Of course it matters.
The beautiful thing about Nestorious Public Radio is that we say things we don't even know what the fuck we're talking about. And it works. This shit works. Anyway, so Rose Troche. The reason I was saying is because Rose was born in Puerto Rico. So most people call her Rose Troche, right? No, you were born in Chicago.
Sonia.
That's Jenny. Jenny's always on the ball. Jenny. Jenny the controller. What's up, mama?
Yeah. I was not. My parents were born in Puerto Rico, so I guess I'm just
calling
myself.
So you were born in Chi-Town.
Rico. I was born in Chi-Town.
Oh, okay. All right.
With all two other Puerto Ricans.
But most people call you Rose Troche.
Yes.
And it's Troche. Mm-hmm. Got it. Anyway, so Rose, Rose is a pretty established.
Just leave it there.
No. Well, a pretty, but also a pretty established filmmaker. I'm gonna go back to 94 when you did Go Fish.
When I was 12, yeah.
Yeah, when you were 12, when you did Go Fish, which was a trend-setting, impactful. I hate when people say lesbian film or black film or Spanish film, but everything in the arts has to be categorized and labeled, right?
Yeah.
So, but you did the first notable, I guess, film that portrayed lesbians in a realistic way, yeah?
Well, I'm not. There were films. It will be said that it was the first, but it wasn't the first.
Okay.
There were definitely. No, because there were films before that.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Big up for all your films that come before Go Fish, but yet nobody knows what the fuck it is, man.
I get you.
No, it was Desert Arts. There was Desert Arts.
Where was that?
That was a movie by Donna Deitch. It was a great movie.
I get it. I love her, and I'm glad she did it, but that shit sounds like a Midwestern cinema, like a coffee house, desert cinema. What is it called?
It kind of was.
Desert Hearts.
Desert Hearts.
It was a good film.
Yeah. It was a good film.
I didn't see it.
Really good film.
But it wasn't Go Fish.
Yeah. It was much more accomplished than
Go Fish. So then why?
Go Fish, I think, was a movie that sort of more than a lesbian film. I think it was a DIY film that launched 1,000 DIY movies back in the early back in the early 90s. Meaning, yeah, I was just like, if that movie made money, right, I'm going to make a movie in my garage.
Right. You know? If that spick lesbian can direct, I can sure make three burgers and sell them.
It launched 1,000. Okay. Like, you know.
Okay, let's start from there then. That's great. So you just said that there were other lesbian films, but yours wasn't the first. Okay, but then why was Go Fish such a big deal when it came out?
You know, no one can answer that question, really. And I don't really... I think every movie is about hitting something at a time and a place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out of your control. Mm-hmm. We weren't making that film thinking, oh, and now... at the moment, filmmaking is so different, right?
Now,
because you're constantly looking at who your audience is. You're looking exactly at who you're
trying to
target.
How you can market, how
you're
going to
target from like years before you even start your project. Mm-hmm, you're starting to get your audience
right.
With that, we weren't. So it was really like, who would have known that the lesbian movie that you thought. I mean, I shot that thing on 16mm thinking I would never blow up.
Wow.
So, you know, we didn't even frame it to blow up to 35.
Right. It was out of focus and everything. And so people were like, that was the way it was supposed to be. No,
but, yeah, no, it would be like,
that's an amazing
cartoon
film.
Man, is that the way lesbians look in reality?
Yeah, like super close up.
Man, the ones I've seen on the History Channel don't look like that.
So, you know, it was a certain moment in time.
It just depends on who sees it, right?
Yeah, and it was really like, it was a very successful film.
Yes, it was.
A very successful independent film.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. It made like 200 times what we made it for.
Which is unbelievable.
Yeah, so, it was released in a whole bunch of countries.
Okay.
And like I traveled all over the world and it was like,
and you still were traveling
experience.
All over the world.
I am still traveling
so, okay,
all over the world.
So your movie was very successful. It made about 200 times what you made it for, which is a huge statement.
When you make it for 2 cents,
You're damn right. Well, when you're making an independent film, it's all relative, right? When you're doing it yourself, meaning you're getting your own money. I mean, we just went through the same process.
Yeah.
You know, people say, why would you use your own money?
Yeah.
It's like, well, if you didn't use your own money, you'd be mooching off of somebody to get you high on somebody's couch, and you'd still be talking about Go Fish.
Yeah. There was no Kickstarter then.
Right.
So, you know, it was really like, you know.
But even at the end of the day, people get things done because they get things done.
Yeah.
Not because you're sitting at home hoping that somebody's going to... I mean, okay, so it made 200 times what you put in there, right?
Yeah.
So then we can take that and say, all right, well, that DIY, right?
Right.
Do it. DIY, sorry.
Do it yourself.
I did a show on Home and Garden TV that was a do-it-yourself show. So I'm like, anyway, so... That was the DIY that basically said, wow, if she could do that because it was so successful, that's really the deal.
Yeah.
Because it was so successful, then we can do that. But also, you opened up the door. You cracked it open also for not just women filmmakers, but let's say the gay cinema. Because after that film, there was a lot more like... You know, gay. Themed movies.
Right. Well, Be Ruby Rich had prior to Go Fish coming out, Be Ruby Rich had sort of categorized it as new queer cinema.
Queer
cinema, and it's like the 20th anniversary of that, and that was like Todd Haynes with Safe, and it was Tom Kalin with Swoon,
right,
and Greg Araki with The Living End, and you know, there were a bunch of filmmakers who were making work at that time, and so I was just one in a line of those, you know, and I came in like a little bit later, but certainly I think that, you know, that it was a moment of independent filmmaking as well. I mean, Clerks came out that same year, and
Kevin Smith, y'all.
Yeah, who made the film for like, also made, $5. Made a film for like, the same amount of money kind of we made the film for. We sold to Goldwyn, they sold to, you know, the next night they sold to Miramax.
Yeah.
And
he
it was,
blew the fuck
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and it launched, yeah, it launched yeah. both careers.
Jay and Silent Bob and
yeah,
I mean, that,
yeah, and
Kevin
his
Smith
a,
has a. Has,
in a very big way.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but that's like, there, that was, it was a particular kind of independent film that I think. That I think then kind of disappeared and then now is sort of coming back again. This sort of very kind of like, let's do it ourselves. Let's
make
it
firm. How did that, after that film and that experience and then being a part of that group of filmmakers, then what went on after that?
Right.
I think what happened is that what we saw in independent filmmaking is that there were a bunch of companies, like, you know, Fox had an independent division, Universal had an independent, Paramount had an independent division, and we saw over the years all of those things shut down.
Right.
And then suddenly there became this huge disparity where independent films started to become $15 million films. And then with technology,
right.
now with the changes in technology and it opening up, allowing a lot of people.
Oh, me.
No, yeah. but that's cool. Finish that thought.
But you're saying technology allowed us to take our own films, a fucking camera
and just do it yourself and videotape it.
You can shoot something with a Red Epic and Christmas lights and it'll look beautiful.
So it's recycling that DIY mentality.
We're back to making films for the same amount of money. We were talking about this earlier. For almost the same amount of money we did almost 20 years ago. Or 15 years ago, because now we have that technology.
Well, people do
a lot more things all themselves. They produce, edit, write, direct. That same thing.
You look at YouTube. You look at all these internet social media platforms where people are doing things very small time, meaning small content, and just shit blowing up, and people becoming famous and rich off of stupid shit. So, stupid.
I'm looking for my stupid.
When I say stupid, you know, for those of you out there, I'm not talking about you specifically. I'm talking about stupid in a subjective way. Like, for most people, it would be meaningless. But for a certain generation, the current generation, it's brilliant.
Right.
You know what I mean? But so what Rosemary was asking, so after that success, you went on to what? You got into television?
I did kind of what a lot of people, I think the dream used to be that what would happen is that you would make an independent film for a little bit of money, then your next film would be more money, and then your film after that would be more money, and so on and so on.
More money!
More problems. And so that is what happened. I made my second movie for it was $2.5 million. A movie called Bedrooms and Hallways, which I did in London. Bedrooms and Hallways. And then I did Safety of Objects.
Those are both your films, in 2001,
which directed both of those
with your own money, or you had some help with some people?
No, those were not my own money, because Safety of Objects was an $8 million movie.
Right.
Puerto
Ricans can make a little, you know, some magically delicious cheddar.
Well, no, and then that's when you get into, if you're a woman and you don't make your money back, you ain't going to see, people are not going to be lying enough.
We're going to get into that shortly about the higher expectations that are put upon women to make more money or be more successful because they're getting, I don't know if I want to give you, a lesbian woman, money to do my next film. I don't know if I can trust you. You know what I mean?
And I was reading this article
and basically the subconscious thing is that I'm only comfortable giving somebody who looks like me money to do a film. And the film industry...
You're a little too brown to give money to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And the film industry is mostly white men. So anyway, that was one of the things...
It's getting a little bit more diverse, but it's getting diverse in the independent sense of where we're at right now. We are seeing a moment where there's a lot of people... being allowed to make films again because we can make them at a lower price point.
Right.
And that's where you see a lot of diversity in filmmaking.
Right.
And of course, at the top, you don't.
Right.
The minute you get higher and higher in budget, the more you're going to see less and less diversity in the faces of the directors. Mm-hmm.
So you made a couple of films after Go Fish. Mm-hmm. And then what year are we now? 2001?
2001. And then I did 6 Feet Under at that time. I decided...
One of my favorite shows, 6 Feet Under. That was a fucking great show.
Yeah, it was. And it was really like... Alan Ball. Alan Ball, yeah. I realized that I had, I was at my third film... a sort of a decade had passed, and I was just like, oh, I should really be directing more. So I wanted to do sort of hour-long quality television. And then shortly after doing 6 Feet Under, as Safety was about to come out, I was offered the pilot for The L Word.
Right.
And then did that, and then was in that for sort of like almost a decade.
You did The L Word for 10 years?
Well, I did the pilot. So I did the pilot for The L Word. I also did the pilot for a show called South of Nowhere, which ran on the N Network for 4 seasons.
The N Network?
Yeah, the N Network.
What
which is
that,
part
for
of
black people?
No.
That's like an old black network before Oprah got. Oh, Nickelodeon.
It's like the.
Well, I figured the L word was like, you know, code, and the N word was like the N network. Nope. It's like, yo, brothers, how you doing? Yeah. You ain't got no time for no white shit? Well, tune in this week. Anyway, go ahead.
You know.
So the N network. I never heard of the N network. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So Nickelodeon, so what were you doing? Children's content?
No, it was another thing about sexuality, like girls, like, really? You know, kids in high school, and really? These two girls who were like kind of fell in love and
again with the lesbian
again with
theme.
Again with that old chestnut.
Okay, no, that's all right.
It's very hard for me to be on Christian Mingle now because of all of this stuff. It's very difficult. My profile is really compromised.
But hold on. That's Christian awesome. Let me tell you something. People complain about niches, right? Whether you're a comedian, mm-hmm. whether you're an artist, whether you're an actor, right? And I think that part of life is knowing who you are, right?
Yeah.
Once you know who you are and you're cool with who you are, right. then you are who you are wherever you go. Yeah. And so and you have to know who you are in order to fit in, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. A Christian who wants to mingle.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But I think that's awesome. So L word. So most people don't know directing the pilot for any show means.
It means that you are. It's a great job to have because you're kind of setting the look for the show. You're setting the tone for the show. You're casting. You're casting the show.
It means a lot of motherfucking money is what it means. That's what it means.
It means you got cheddar for weeks. You get some extra cheddar.
It means when the welfare truck comes out and they're giving out a lot of blocks of cheese, you're like, nah, it's all good. I got some.
That's not nacho cheese. That's your cheese.
Yeah. So you got your shit. Yeah, for
my grandma used to get that. We used to fight over that.
Yeah.
We used to fight over
cheese. Block of cheese.
Why does Uncle Hector get some and we don't get any?
Right. Yeah, they used to give you a block of fucking cheese that was like 3 pounds.
You could knock someone out with it.
First of all, most refrigerators back in the 70s couldn't hold 3 pounds of fucking cheese. And you're not going to eat 3 pounds of cheese in like a month, which is stretching.
That's why you split it with the family.
Split it with the family, that's right.
My grandma used to be like, it depends how good you were to her. Mm-hmm, if she'd give you like a chunk of cheese.
Right.
It's a pasteles.
Right. What you mean you want sandwich? Tenemos grilled cheese. This week, grilled cheese con arroz y habichuela. Grilled cheese para desayuno. Grilled cheese para almuerzo. Grilled cheese para...
I don't even know what we used it for because we didn't make no grilled cheese. Yeah. So I don't know where that got.
And fucking people didn't eat tacos at that time, so you couldn't even shred it, right? I mean, it wasn't like Mexican culture.
Yeah, we're Rican, so we don't do tacos.
But I'm curious because you have like the one... type of movie, or maybe you're put in this kind of niche, mm-hmm. but then beyond that, you're a storyteller. Mm-hmm. So there are still different types of stories that appeal to you or that you're mm-hmm. drawn into. Yeah. So with your first film, Go Fish, and then the other films, and then L Word, is there a connection like thematically to something that draws you in?
I think the films were definitely kind of where I was at that moment in my life. In every one of them. I think with Go Fish, that was like, you know, Go Fish really kind of came out of activism. Mm-hmm. I was in ACT UP. I was in Queer Nation. We would just go and get arrested.
Queer Nation.
And we would do like kiss-ins and lesbian visibility. And that all came out of that. And a lot of people who worked on that were activists themselves. And that came directly out of that world. And then by the time I made Bedrooms and Hallways, I was really sort of in a moment of like, why do we define ourselves so much by our sexuality? Mm-hmm, it's so like mm-hmm. ridiculous to put each other in boxes.
When you say why do we define, meaning the homosexual community?
No,
or
I
people?
Mean all of us. People. I mean all of us. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean actually heterosexuals even more because mm-hmm. they're almost more staunchly in a box than we are. You know, like
really?
I think a lot of gay people have had a lot of different kinds of sex. I mean, that's an overgeneralization. Perhaps I should just speak for myself, but you know,
well,
like
when you say. You're comparing heterosexual couples.
We're going on this tangent.
I find it interesting.
As far as open experiences go,
no, but you're talking
that
about
some people are more open, or maybe open-mindedness does not fall on maybe straight.
Yeah, but how do you get from why do we have to be defined in terms of our sexuality?
Maybe I'll just bring it back to me. At that moment in my life, I was just like, I don't know where I'm going to fall. I don't know if I'm going to be with men, with women. I don't know.
Right.
And that had to do, and I don't particularly like the fact that if you if you're someone who defines yourself in a particular way, if you have sex with the opposite or the same sex, does it necessarily define you as that thing?
Got it.
Does it suddenly erase all of your, if you define yourself as lesbian and you know, fuck a guy, does that suddenly make you straight? I don't think so.
And the Christians are up your ass going, wait a minute, you're fucking with me.
It immediately changed, you know, people can't switch that fast. Right. They're like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah. Wait a minute, hold on, you're not allowed to do that.
At that moment in my life, I was into that. I was like, okay, so this film is sort of contemplating that.
Gotcha.
And then with Safety of Objects, you know, I was like, what are things and why do things define us and why are we so attached to this stuff?
Right.
And so that was kind of a lot of the questions that I was asking myself, you know, like, how do you kind of go as you get older and people expect that you have to collect things and have a house and a car and a blah,
and if you
and blah,
don't, and you something's don't, wrong then, with you, you yeah, feel inadequate.
Are you, right. Are you,
you,
you know,
just
like,
shoot yourself.
Yeah. And the fact that those things are very empty, a very empty way to sort of define yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's really been about a moment in time. And the things that I'm working on now are very much the same thing. So it's sort of been whatever my life has led me. And it's interesting because I was asking you earlier about your film now and like kind of where the idea for your newest film came from and because I find it very interesting.
We're talking about Silver Skies, a movie about over 55 apartment complex.
I think that there's always like characters and stuff that I want to do or in TV episodes that I do that I'll latch on to characters that represent people I know or relationships I'm trying to work out. But overall, I think, you know, for me, it's always it's not really expressing my voice, although it is because I'm a director, but it's also trying to give groups of people a voice that I think feel like don't have one in society.
Yeah.
So I always want to portray characters like that.
You know? And you did that with your first film as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Acts of worship.
Yeah. That's what I hope to keep doing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we all get limited in what we see and what we see on screen.
Right.
Yeah, you can definitely see that in your two films. Like you can definitely see that it's not, you know, it's not your characters are not cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they definitely have surprises and the plot, like the twists in the plot, you know, things that are unexpected that are such sort of harsh realities. At the same time, you know, there's this humor and there's this, like, I mean, in Silver Skies, especially, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like it's got these lovely turns and then it has like this reality to the whole thing where it's just like, you know, it ain't easy getting older.
Yeah, I think that's important in life. I mean, you know, I was watching last night, like a TiVo of Dr. Oz, and we were talking about, because he was talking about people. He did like a poll of like 3,000 people. Right, mostly women, but like what defines happiness for them? And he was talking he was talking about social media and how we portray ourselves on social media and how we portray ourselves as like perfect and happy. We only put pictures where we look really good and it's always like, hey, I just gave birth or hey, look at the food I'm eating or hey, like everything is so perfect and pretty on the outside.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah.
So it seems like less and less, even though we feel like we're connected, less and less does it feel about a real experience in life.
It causes people to become depressed.
It causes depression.
If you're
on Facebook 8 hours a day, your penis shrinks. That's just for you guys. I'm just
Mine's
saying,
like
you know
down
that.
To nothing.
Right. I'm just saying. So I just want to get back to Rose's journey here.
Yeah.
So directing a lot of television, L Word, and you producing also. You've been producing.
Yeah.
You've produced a few things. I was reading about this film, Concussion, mm-hmm. that you produced.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that film turn out? How did it go? What was the reception for it? Was that in for television, was it?
No, it wasn't for television.
It went to Sundance.
Yeah, it's Stacey Passon's first feature.
It went to Sundance.
Yeah, it went to Sundance. It was in competition in Sundance in 2013.
Good. Awesome.
And then we went on to, it did well. It was bought by Radius, the Weinstein Company.
Nice.
And then it was released this past summer. And it was sort of day and date, which means that it was released in theaters and online and pay-per-view at the same day.
At the same time, which is the new
which
way
sort
of
is the new model. It was Radius's model for the most part. Right. And then it went on to get. We were nominated for a Gotham for Robin Weigert. Weigert's performance as the lead character Abby. It was Stacey was nominated for Best Director, and then we just had the Spirit Awards where we were nominated, and of course we lost to the for Best First Feature.
Congratulations!
And
that's a fucking big deal.
Yeah, and you know, it was hilarious because Stacey and I before
this was this year.
Yeah, just this past
Saturday. Really, congratulations!
Thank you. And then Stacey and I looked at each other as like the category came up, and we go, "Did you even prepare anything?" I was like. No, I don't even have an inkling that I'm going to go up there because Fruitvale.
Right.
I knew the Fruitvale station was going to win.
But you can also tell by where they sit you. So like if you sat.
Yeah, because 20 feet from Stardom, which was also Radius' film, was right next to us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they won.
Because when we went, we were in the parking lot.
Our film was nominated. we had to get the valet to let us know. When they were announcing the films.
I think the camera didn't even bother coming to the table. And when 20 Feet was winning, I'm just like, oh damn, the camera's right there.
Are you kidding
me? You guys are going to win.
Are you kidding
me? You're going to win.
Rosemary had a fucking conniption because she thought, and we were nominated for the John Cassavetes film, right, award. So
that's
basically,
awesome, and that's appropriate.
And who was it? Was it Roger Ebert that was announcing the thing?
No,
it was Peter Falk, right?
Because it's John Cassavetes Award, and so that year Peter Falk was giving the award.
I would have just been like, ran up there anyway. I thought it was
so exciting to me, right? Yeah.
So
even be like in the category with him announcing the name.
So they announced it, and Rosemary thought that they showed our picture.
Well, they air it on IFC. I don't know if they still do.
Yes, they do.
Okay, so they aired it on IFC. So after the whole ceremony, we went back to the car, and I called my sister, right? Because, to report.
So how did we look? How was my lipstick?
So I said, did you see a clip from the movie on TV? And she said, no. And I said, well, what do you mean? You didn't see us on TV? And she said, no. I'm like, well, did you see Peter Falk on TV? And she said, no. I'm like, you watched. They didn't air that category when they aired the show. So the Independent Spirit Awards didn't air the John Cassavetes Award.
Anyway.
Yeah, they don't do clips now.
Anyway, Rosemary, at that point.
But they
point,
didn't air that award.
That's at so that funny. Point, Rosemary was driving.
I lost my shit.
We were driving our Wilshire.
I did.
We're driving our Wilshire past Westwood. And that's what was going on. I said, oh, shit. Something's going to blow up. Something's going to blow up.
I was punching the dashboard.
Oh, my God. That's the theme from Ironside. It's Ironside, but it was used in Kill Bill.
From Ironside.
Yeah, that was Ironside. That was used from Kill Bill. Anyway, so congratulations. That's a big fucking deal.
Thank you.
So the film. I mean, I read about the film. I haven't seen it, but it's very interesting. It's about Abby, an upscale housewife, married to a woman who becomes a prostitute for other women, following a head injury. So basically, she's happily married to another woman. She falls, gets a concussion.
She's not happily married.
Well, she's not.
She's married.
She's just married. Okay, got it. So she's married. She has a good life on the outside, right?
Yeah,
because she lives in an upscale home, and they're probably very successful, but she's not happy. So the concussion is probably the impetus for her to find fantasy type of happiness.
It's almost metaphorical,
right.
A blow to the head.
This film sounds like porn to most guys. So you guys, go check it out. This sounds like fantasy for most, 18 to 30
year old
guys.
It's on demand.
So go check it out. It's on on-demand.
Concussion.
Concussion.
On iTunes.
And on iTunes. Hey, and just so you guys know, I mean, seriously, I mean, a lot of the listeners I know.
I think it's a great date movie, quite honestly.
Well,
I think it's a wonderful date movie and I'll tell you why. I think it's a good date movie especially for straight couples because it's a way to discuss sort of perhaps things which are not fresh in a marriage without implicating yourself because it's a gay couple, right? So you're just like, it can be a subject that you bring up.
Oh, without being it's not about me.
Yeah, it's not about me, baby.
Right.
It's not, you're not watching Faithful.
Right.
You know, you're just like, oh no, but I would never cheat on you.
Right.
It's just that those crazy lesbians, they do that, but anyway, I think it's a really great date movie. I think it's a good date dinner discussion.
Well, I think also what's amazing, what's really rare about you as a filmmaker, And as a person, and I don't know you that well, but I think what's really great is that, you know, someone else directed Concussion, and that you are, that you produced it, and that you are very supportive, and you show yourself to be an example over the years of a female director that is so supportive of other women around you. And I think that's, you know,
I believe in it.
And I hope. I mean, it always inspires me, and I, you know, it's always the hope that, you know, we talk about. I know, you know, I don't know if Nestor's going to talk about it or not, but gender inequality, whether we get to it or not.
Yeah.
It's just if more of us reached out and tried to pull up other people and try to help.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that you're a shining example of that. And I think the fact that that movie is doing well is largely because of your support as well for another talented woman.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that I think that we have to kind of help each other and hold each other up, you know. And I you know, it's just necessary. Mm-hmm. I think it's necessary, you know, for filmmakers of color. I think it's necessary for women, for any minority filmmaker. Mm-hmm. It's tough enough, you know, and I think that we can, especially now, I think that we can make these sort of really help each other with, like, you know, like it's like asking a question, like, who did you do your color timing with? Did you get a good deal? Like, right. It's sharing information.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And there are, like, you know,
as opposed to somebody being like, I don't know.
No,
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, keeping all your cards, to, you know, keeping everything to yourself.
You're known for that. You're known for being generous with your time and your expertise and your opinions about stuff. And you're a very good critic about things. You're not a hater.
Try not to be a hater.
Well, no, I met you, I mean, that's an example, though. No,
too.
She is an example.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and maybe that'll pay, people will pay it forward, hopefully.
No,
you know,
and she's known for that. I mean, it's not like, you know, when people talk about Rose Troche, they don't go, oh, she's a fucking asshole. They'll be like,
some people do.
No. Well, maybe for other reasons, but most people be like, oh, she's cool. She helped me out. Yeah. Whenever I needed something, I can call her. You know,
I knew that Rose Troche. Man, she wouldn't do shit for me because I'm a man.
Which is
she
not
just
true.
Sticking with her girl homies. I asked her a question one day. She just gave me a hand.
Which is bizarre. Anyway, so with that, let's go into gender equality. Here's a quote. The percentage of women directing, writing, producing, editing, and shooting films has declined since 1998, according to an analysis of the top 250 grossing films of 2013 by the Center of the Study of Women in Television and Film at San Diego State University. And this is in parentheses, the anticipated halo effect from Kathryn Bigelow becoming the first woman to win a directing Oscar for 2009's The Hurt Locker never happened. So basically, there was this hope, especially amongst women directors, for instance, that fuck, a woman won for best film, which was Hurt Locker, which was a phenomenal film. I don't give a shit if it was a woman, a black guy, whatever. It was a phenomenal film, but it just so happened to be Kathryn Bigelow, and you know.
I don't know who that gave hope to. It didn't give me hope.
Well, I'm saying
let me
that
just
was.
Put it, let me just. I mean,
okay.
I mean for someone.
It didn't give
these
you
things
hope.
Are gonna no. I just
why,
just
why not?
In the same way that I don't think that suddenly since Steve McQueen won that it's gonna be like a long line of African American
or slaves
or British American, you know, or black filmmakers
or slaves looking
you know,
to make
yeah.
films.
I mean, I don't. I think that these things happen every once in a while, and then the doors seem to shut on it
for
a number of years, and I don't know why it trends like that.
It's
you know?
Like a token, like, hey, this is what we can do.
We did
and
that.
We
right
did
now.
That. Let's right.
Yeah,
right,
and
right.
like you know, like the
because then they can point to that. They can say, oh, well, we're not sexist because she just did this movie.
It's like the year Halle Berry won, and there were two. It was Halle Berry and Denzel Washington both won the same year, and that's outstanding, but. Does it open it up for everything? You know, now that it happened once, is it going to happen again? Like, when are we going to see another, you know, mixed race president? I don't know. You know,
right.
When are you going to? I mean, even with little things like the L word. Like, when are you ever going to see a show like the L word?
How long
come
did
on
the
again?
L word run for?
You six seasons, and it was immensely popular. But and you would think that someone else would pick that up and run with it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really happen that way.
Like
weirdly.
A cartoon series for Nickelodeon.
Yeah. And so Kathryn Bigelow and also because I think, you know, and she's a filmmaker. She's a woman, but she's a filmmaker who also does, you know, her work is would fall, if you know, gender wise, it would fall more under the category of guy film, right?
Right.
And
that film in particular.
Yeah, traditional women's narratives are sort of kind of looked, they're sort of like the redheaded stepchild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just like, oh, it's a ladies' flick. And I know that Cate Blanchett got up there this year and said, right, like, look, people want to see these movies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I love her for saying that.
The world is round, people.
But do people want to see, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you want to talk about chick films? They fucking seem to do great. Whenever you see these stupid romantic comedies, I mean, those are date films, chick films. Those are not fucking, you know, hairy ball, scratch your ass guy type of films, as far as I'm concerned.
And usually directed by men.
Right, right. But that just goes to show that.
Well, I think more guys will go, more women, excuse me, more women will go see movies that guys want to go see.
Absolutely.
Than guys will go see women's film. Like, men will just dismiss a movie. I'm not going to see that movie.
Well, we've learned from a very young age how to enjoy a movie, how to identify with a male character. How do women right. do that? Because otherwise we're not going to get pleasure out of most cinema.
As I'm sure minorities do with white characters. Right,
absolutely.
You have to just see the humanity of it. And if you just go by the color of skin, nobody will see anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like when I watched Star Wars, I didn't identify with Darth Vader. I identified with Luke Skywalker. I just imagined him being my Puerto Rican grandfather, even though my Puerto Rican grandfather was a little light skinned. You know?
Yeah, I looked something up here, and
you did.
I did, yeah, and believe it or not,
you did.
And if
ain't nobody got time for that.
I know, but you're gonna hear it anyway.
Yeah,
because Jezebel.com has a thing on here, and there, it says here that there is only one female film director for every 15.24 male ones, and they aren't getting any better. And there's an independent study called Exploring the Barriers and Opportunities for Independent Women Filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
It was done by researchers at the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California. And it assessed 11,197 directors, writers, and producers, cinematographers, and editors whose movies screened in Sundance from 2002 to 2012. 29.8% of filmmakers, directors, writers, producers, just filmmakers in general, were female, just 29%.
Yep.
And it says
yet there are more women in film school.
Right.
Right.
At least they're not in Betty Crocker cooking school. I mean, that's an advancement. You know what I mean?
And this is exactly what you said. It says women are more likely to be producers, and as the roles become more high profile and money becomes a factor, the number of women goes down. So women are more likely to be associate producers than producers
right.
as the money goes up.
Right.
You know, women support women. Films directed by women feature more women in all roles.
This is a
pretty interesting article.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just tuning in, you listen to Nestorius Public Radio live every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. here on skidrowstudios.motherfucking.com.
Nestorius!
We're live. We're on video. You can go to skidrowstudios.com. On the top, it says live video. Click on the link. You'll see us live. We're here, live and direct. If you're near a phone and you want to talk, 1-800-893-9562. 1-800-893-9562. And we're talking to Rose Troche, a.k.a. Rose Troche. And Rosemary Rodriguez, Rich Carbon, of course, your boy, holla at your motherfucking boy.
Peace, this is Common, and right now you're checking out Nestorius Public Radio. Y'all stay in tune. Love.
That's right. So I wanted to do this quote from Jodie Foster, which kind of like, I kind of alluded to it the other day. So Jodie, earlier, not the other day, to me, as I'm Puerto Rican, earlier means the other day, because, you know, shit happens and... Like
I'm so punctual.
Slow time. So Jodie Foster told the LA Times that when men hire directors, they say to themselves, I'm going to hand over $60 million to somebody I don't know. I hope they look like me. That's what I was saying earlier. She also criticized risk-averse female studio executives who regard female directors as too much of a risk. And I've heard that also where, you know, again, you think that there's a female studio executive at the top that you're going to have a better understanding and as an in, and it's the complete opposite. It's almost like the minority syndrome, right?
Yeah.
So you're Puerto Rican, you think, oh, the police officer's Puerto Rican, he thinks he's Boricua, he might give you a break. On the contrary,
mm-mm.
He's going to treat you worse.
It's going to be like, I remember that. I grew up in Chicago, so that's like, and I remember that specifically,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That example.
Oh, yeah.
from like, I'd be like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
You're acting more white than that dude's doing.
Yep. And like, and you're like, treating the white dude with a little bit more respect.
Yeah. And we're even both Puerto Rican, like, what are you doing?
That's right.
Black police showing out for the white cop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is article too that I was reading the other day in the doctor's office in the waiting room. It's from Entertainment Weekly, and it's talking about the same issue. And it's just talking about this woman producer, Nina Jacobson, who says she's been seeking a director for an adaptation of the bestseller Where'd You Go, Bernadette. It says few women have applied, which makes it tough if you're looking to give female directors a break. If the percentage, this is a quote, if the percentage of available talent is small, then the percentage of serious candidates is small, Jacobson says. It's hard to break the cycle. So I'm just curious. I never heard of that project. Nobody ever. Did anyone come to you with that project?
No.
Like, she's looking for. So I'm just curious
they
how that
me,
even
they
happens.
They called me a couple weeks about that. I told them I was busy. I was doing the Sorius Public Radio. I told them to put an ad out on Craigslist. So, I mean, you got to be on Craigslist. You got to look on Craigslist.
But I think it's hard when people put things out there like that. Well, you know, the percentage of available talent is small. It's like people have this myth that there's not that many women directors,
well,
period.
It's a catch-22. Why is it small? Why is it small at that level?
But it's not
because
even
nobody's
small.
Nobody's hired at that level.
Right, right.
It's there's like, a small number of working directors. There's a lot of directors.
Oh, yeah, but they're unproven.
Or
unbankable.
At a certain amount of money, you're going to get less and less women. And less and less, the more money, the less you're going to hand that chunk of money over to a woman and say, hey,
correct,
I want you to do my movie.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It's like we're, you know, but it, and part of me doesn't like ever talking about this because it's so is the way it is. It is the way it is. But we do have the opportunity of making films now, just like you made your film.
Yeah.
Sure, it's not as glamorous. But man, if you have something to say and you want to make your films,
can do it.
We can do it now.
Yeah.
We have the technology,
and we
as
have
they
to
say.
Help each other.
Yeah, and we
to
do
it.
Have to help each other do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And there's like, you know, there's like groups that have come up. There's like a Leah Meyerhoff, in New York has like made a group of that meet every month called Film Fatales, and like, you know, and there's like lists that are made of like vendors and people that we want to work with, and like, you know, and there's like, and it's all about shared information,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about like sort of building, you know, a community. And I think that's something that we're doing to help ourselves now.
Building a community. El servicio de National Public Radio. Si ustedes están en la casa metido en escondido debajo de la mesa, you are fucked up. Wake up, my friends. Anyway, one more quote.
Get off from under the table.
I do that shit. Get up from under the table. Wake the fuck up. Wipe your eyes. You know what I'm saying? Invest in some dental floss. You know what I mean? Brush your teeth from the top to the bottom and the back to the front. You know what I mean? Make shit happen, man. Wake the fuck up. You know what I mean? And one more quote. All right. One more quote. I kind of like this one. This is from the chairman of Sony Pictures Entertainment, Amy Pascal. She said that she learned from Gina Davis, who runs an institute in LA on gender and media, that the most important thing is having female protagonists. It doesn't matter if they're a villain or a hero. It just matters that their actions have consequences. So you have, you know, female identification, as opposed to what you were saying earlier, that as a woman, you wind up identifying with the men. So that you can have at least some sort of identification.
If you're watching that particular kind of movie.
Right.
You know.
Or even if you look at TV shows, though, and you think about the protagonists lately, you think about Don Draper's, the Walter Whites, and all these characters that are really, you know, questionable morality and not likable people.
But it's okay because they're white guys.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm also, I mean, talking about the L word, to see, you know, a show with a female protagonist that is not likable. And see it succeed in the same way.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Nurse
right.
Jackie probably comes closest to that. I mean mm-hmm. she's still likable, but she's mm-hmm. she does some fucked up things on
But she's
on
a
show.
Really good nurse and she takes care
yeah,
of people.
Yeah, she has all those.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's Edie Falco. So, you know.
Well, she rocks.
Well, Edie Falco can't, you know,
I love
she's
that show.
She's,
but that's a good awesome. That's a good point.
She's probably the closest you get right now, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Anyway, so I read this article, two articles. Well, I'm gonna start with the men since we're talking about women and men. I'll do the men. So, some Brooklyn hipsters with patchy beards are getting facial hair transplants to give them fashionable lumberjack style beards.
I'll sell them mine.
Full beards have become an important male identifier, said Dr. Jeffrey Epstein, a plastic surgeon who performs the $8,000 transplants. One of the best investments I've ever made. A now full bearded customer told the New York Post. All right, so.
I think beards are disgusting. No.
That is fucking disgusting.
He should have spent that money on another
$8,000 on fucking beard transplants.
He's not going to have enough money to hang out at Starbucks anymore then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm glad we're together again.
Exactly. Where do you think they took the hair from?
Their ass. Of course, because when you don't have hair on your face, you got to go to the ass.
That's the most bristly hair that you have on your body besides your face.
I mean, the closest thing to human facial hair is ass hair when it comes to a man.
But do you think that makes a guy feel more macho?
I think that's what it's coming down to, but I think that there's
Would you think that guy is telling anyone that he paid for the beard?
Absolutely not. No. Absolutely not. And
he's just drinking his PBR in a corner.
Well, the good thing about it is that it's not that obvious as opposed to hair transplants and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Mm. Like you don't have to explain a beard because a beard is a beard. My facial hair, no one's facial hair grows perfect. It doesn't grow even. I have spots on my face that don't grow, and some people just don't look good in beards. You know what I mean?
But in general, does that make you feel less of a man if it doesn't grow perfectly?
Does it feel weird? To be honest with you, I always look at the mirror and I go, man, why'd you have to do that to me? I always want my hair to grow down onto my sides, like to have full lamb chops, and they never, like...
Beard envy.
Yeah, because you're Puerto Rican.
Yeah, and I go, man, por qué? Why?
It took my brother until like 30 years to grow this little bit between here
right,
and there.
Right.
Dude's going to be, you know, those guys that are paying that much for that beard, they're going to be pissed when the beards are out of fashion and they have to start shaving that shit. Because a couple years ago, it was just mustaches with these hipsters. Now they went in the full beard. When they start having to shave that shit, they're going to be pissed off. Because I just spent $8,000 I never had to shave. Now, I fucking hate shaving this thing.
Me too.
I seriously hate this.
He probably doesn't have to shave.
The
guy who just bought his beard.
Well, but when it falls out of fashion, then he's going to have to start shaving again. When the hipsters turn into whatever the next level that they turn into, they're going to, you know.
Yeah. The next level that they turn into... They're always
changing those hipsters.
2 weeks after they spend $8,000 for their fucking beard, they go to the next level. Retards. That's what they're called.
They're going to start growing their armpit hair out.
That's called having too much money to spend.
They're just going
to
cut out the bottom of their shirt just to make a point and grow their armpit hair out and braid it.
Just like those tails that people used to have.
Back in the day.
They're going to just do some fucked up thing because it hasn't been done yet.
Used to get a DA and then used to have a long hair. That's in the 80s.
That's just their teenage just slowly.
No.
It was a tail.
It was a tail.
They just wanted to go around with a pair of scissors and cut all those off.
That was a big thing. I had a tail.
You had
the tail. I grew one on my front.
The girls, females loved it. In 1987, you'd go to Studio 54 in the middle of the dance floor. You had a tail. Everyone would be touching, and you'd be like, "Oh shit!" And in the back of your head, you're going, "In about 20 years, I'm gonna have beard envy." And I'm going to be wishing I had $8,000 that I could pay for somebody to give me a beard transplant. Oh, I should cherish this moment now. Anyway, so on the flip side of that, there's this chick, of course. And I don't know if you saw the picture.
You saw
the picture? A California woman is getting plastic surgery. Duh. Like, that's a fucking...
That's weird.
Yeah. to become a real-life Barbie and hypnotherapy to make her as dumb as a doll. I just want to be the ultimate Barbie, said Blondie Bennett, 38. Being brainless is a big part of that. Bennett has spent over $41,000 on plastic surgery, lip fillers, and Botox to make herself look like a giant busted toy, and is now having weekly sessions with a hypnotist to convince her she's a vacant bimbo. I'm already starting to feel dizzy and confused all the time.
She's wasting time on that therapy because she's already pretty fucking you know, pretty
she's
empty.
Yeah, she's already
pretty empty already. Yeah. Not much going on in between the ears. Boy. Come on. When you're doing that, that's your, like, that's what your defining moment. You were talking about things that define you.
But I think this is all, you know, what is masculine and what is feminine. And Barbie doll is clearly something we all grow up with.
Right.
It's like the feminine ideal of, like, this is what our body's supposed to look like.
Right.
And so she's taking it into a place that...
into a realistic
most of us don't go there, but a lot of us go to some image of ourselves that would be trying to be like that.
Yeah, I'll be posting a picture of Miss Bennett underneath my Skid Row Studios NPR Nestorius Public Radio post for this episode. So, you know, just so you know, a lot of times I post pictures of things that are relevant to the articles or things, subjects that we're talking about. But yeah, most people, so you can see this fucking, this woman is out of her mind. Yeah. She looks like she has like 48 crazy. Triple G's and shit or something to that
effect. Well, they literally look like two dodgeballs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. You know, I think if you can talk about this and use her image as a way to open conversation,
as a use as
about a healthy dialogue about what does a woman look like?
To be touching up on those.
Nothing. No one.
But maybe she's doing it to keep people away from her.
Well, obviously she's looking to just be adored and admired
in a sexual way.
Because that's not sexual.
I mean, because you gotta be.
Yeah, no, that's not sexual. That's very.
You can't do anything with those.
No,
really.
That's not sexual.
You can put your penis in.
And I mean,
yeah.
I guess you could give her a pearl necklace and all that, but then you know, she looks like a Barbie doll that's been left out in the rain. And
no, she doesn't look like she's been left out in the rain.
Been, like,
but
in
I don't really
dirt.
Think. I don't really
that's
think.
That's the point, though.
Just slamming her and judging her. I think you know.
I'm a dick.
There's a good reason to talk about her. No, I mean, I'm just saying. I feel bad for her when I look at that picture. I just feel like
I feel
somebody
bad
who's
for the
lost.
Hipster that spent $8,000 for a beard.
Well, I feel bad
I
for
the
him
more
too.
Disturbing part of this is the wanting to not.
Yeah.
She's putting
not
herself
think.
Out there. She's open to ridicule.
I
some
mean,
people
aren't
are
people
like
on
her
heroin
people
also
are
trying to?
But can I tell you something? This is a trend that's happened in Japan where a lot of women.
Yeah.
Have done a plastic surgery and all sorts
on
of artificial
eyes.
On their eyes so that they can look like
big.
Anime, like Japanese anime dolls. So that's, you know, that's the thing of the future. You know, the next thing is if you're out there and you feel like you have a lot of intelligence, you have too much knowledge.
I don't know if anyone listening to this has a lot of intelligence, and
you're tired of this. What you do is you give me a call. You pay $4,000 an hour, and I'll make you feel like a fucking bimbo. I'll empty out all of your knowledge. I'll make you fucking walk out of your couch as if you have one cranium full of carbon monoxide. Okay, I'll do that for you for nothing. Anyway, so real quick, I just wanted to touch on the Oscars. I'm not sure if anybody saw it, but
it was a great show.
Did everybody see? Well, my favorite thing was Ellen calling in the pizzeria, the pizza guy. The guy comes out, he's giving people pizza, and you're thinking, is this real? But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, it's Ellen, so it's probably Israel. She does shit like that, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out the guy was real. She has him on her show the next day, and you know she was collecting money, and she should give him a tip. I thought that was cool.
But that was great.
That was cool. And then the other
he made some coin.
Oh, he did.
Well, she said she collected $600 and she pulled out $400.
Yeah, was it
$400 to it and said, here's $1,000.
And he was on the Oscars. He was probably an actor, too.
And he was an owner.
He owned it.
He and his brother owned the
That's cool.
Mamas and Papas Pizzeria.
Big Mama and Papas. That place is good pizza. It's pretty good.
Well, they must have just bought it because that place wasn't always Russian, you know? These two guys probably bought it.
We used to get Big Mama and Papa Pizza in Burbank. They had one in Burbank.
Okay, so
we
it's
used
a
to
franchise.
Get that back in the '90s. It was really good.
My friend.
Unfortunately, it's not up to par as it used to be.
The pizza?
So the thing was that
that's Jenny talking.
Sorry,
that's okay.
I just had to.
That's okay.
Update pizza awesome. Update.
Fuck you! I am Pezion.
I fuck my own ass.
I wrote like a note over the box that we have of coupons that are on the fridge.
Oh yeah, and you said Big Mama and Big Papa sucks ass.
Yeah.
Got it.
their delivery it was over an hour and a half. I was waiting for pizza, and then I called them, and they were like, "Oh, we'll be there in 20 minutes." Right. And I called and I was like, okay, I'll wait, you know, 20 minutes.
So it was an hour and 20 minutes already.
15 minutes passed by and I called back and they're like, oh, we'll be there in 20 minutes. And I'm like, just cancel my order. They right. didn't cancel it. They ended up charging it. So I had to work it out with my bank.
Oh, no.
And blah, blah.
Wow.
So I have a terrible experience.
So you use a debit right. card. That's why you have to work it out with your bank, right?
Correct.
Don't ever use a debit card. Always use a credit card.
Well, they're
card.
Lucky. They're
Never
lucky
use
to shut
a debit
up.
Card.
Use your Amex.
Get a credit card just for assholes.
Well, mine can go for both credit and debit.
Yeah, but get a credit card, not a debit card. Because once they take the money out of your bank, then the money's out of your bank. Then you got to fight. Yeah. When it's a credit card.
My bank is good. So yeah? they helped me out. I got it quick and everything. Yeah? But I was just like.
What bank do you have? Wells Fargo?
No, Chase.
Chase.
Oh, Chase is good.
Chase is good.
You should try Bitcoin
next
time. Chase
is good. Chase is good.
Okay.
Chase is good. I mean, as far as a bank, and they stand by you.
Yeah, they help me out.
Every time I have problems.
I'm looking into credit unions.
That's good.
Every time I have an issue or late charge, whatever, they always take care of it.
Well, it's a good thing they didn't keep Ellen waiting an hour.
Right. Yeah, I was surprised that they were the ones that ordered it. I don't.
And you order from right here?
Yeah, the one that's like. 2 blocks down. I can just walk.
Wow. You could have gotten it.
Oh, man.
Well, that's the difference because Hollywood, after a certain time, no one's ordering.
He said on her show that,
you know what I mean?
When he ordered it, he said that he got a call that it was for some writers, some television writers. Mm-hmm. So that's all he said until he showed up.
Mm-hmm. He didn't know.
I said I was calling from Skid Row Studios and they didn't do anything.
Well, that was the problem right there.
Okay, so Oscars. Is this Oscars? No, it's not the Oscars.
Okay, so we're gonna wrap this up. So, Rose, what are you working on? What's going on? What are you doing?
I'm working on I just did a month at Yaddo, which is an artist colony, and that was really amazing and fun.
Yaddo.
Yeah, Yaddo. So that was just like just
where is
brilliant.
Yaddo?
It's in Saratoga Springs,
New York,
and
it's very highfalutin. People
Truman
are like,
Capote used to
people
go there
are blowing
a lot.
Each other to try what to get you, into what the do you artist do there? Community. You write or whatever.
You propose
a like project. Drum circles and stuff, or you?
We don't do drum circles, no. But maybe sometime at some point, like, you know. Like,
do you have massage circles?
No, but well, I'm sure people used to.
We'll talk about Yaddo on another
but,
thing. So what else are you doing?
So then and I'm
you're going to India for the Sundance Lab
for the Sundance Lab.
What are you? Going
to Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to make Wendy drinks beer for breakfast when I get back. Drinks beer for breakfast.
That's your next film.
That's my next film.
That you have you've written it, you've penned it, or is that
I've
your
written
script?
It, I've penned it, yes.
And it's just waiting for you to have
got
the free
the
time to
and
do
sketch
it.
And,
all right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if there's a part for an angry Puerto Rican, let me know. I stab motherfuckers in the neck.
That's behind the camera.
Yeah.
The angry boy.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, you never know. If you need a red-haired step cousin, Rich, you know, he's got
I'm the step-headed red child you always
and,
need.
And Rosemary, you're towards the tail end of post-production of Silver Skies.
Just finished cutting Silver Skies.
Got it. Okay. Well, good. SilverSkiesPictures.com, I believe, or Facebook.com/SilverSkies.
Like it.
Yeah, like it. Check it out. Anyway, NestoriousPublicRadio.com, Facebook, Nestorius Public Radio. Holla at your motherfucking boy every Thursday night, 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, midnight to 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know what I'm saying? Word.
Encouraged me the whole way along.